WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today is the 55th birthday of Pete Townshend, the co-founder, guitarist, and main songwriter of The Who. The surviving members of The Who are reuniting for a summer tour, which will begin in Chicago on June 25th. The Who was founded in 1964 in London and soon became a voice of teenage rebellion with anthems like Townshend's song, My Generation. This song has his most famous line, "Hope I die before I get old."
People try to put us to death.
Talking about my generation.
Just because we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Before I get old.
Talking about my generation.
It's my generation. It's my generation, baby. Why don't you all fade away? Don't try and dig what we all say. I'm not trying to cause a big sensation. I'm just talking about my generation.
Townshend's rebellious energy was expressed not only in his songs, but in his power chords, and in the way he'd smash his guitar at the end of his concerts. Even people who don't know much about The Who are aware of their rock opera Tommy, about the deaf, dumb, and blind kid who became a pinball wizard. The 1969 album later became a Ken Russell film and a Broadway hit. On this archive edition, we have a 1993 interview with Townshend, recorded after he broke his wrist in a bicycle accident, which left him temporarily unable to play.
The wrist injury was a life-changing thing for me. It changed a whole lot of things, and because it was so in the short term, immediately after the accident, it was so devastating. I couldn't write, I couldn't type, I certainly couldn't play any musical instrument, and it was a very, very complicated fracture, and I had no idea whether physiotherapy was going to get what kind of movement I was going to get back, and all the signs were that it was going to be a long, drawn out process of maybe 5 years with maybe three or four operations, So I was kind of looking at, you know, and I suppose in a way I was already in semi-retirement. I had a career as a solo artist, but, you know, I didn't, you know, it's not something that takes up an immense amount of time. I just had time to stop and look at what was happening in my life and who I was and who I wanted to be and, you know, how much I really cared about not being able to play and how much I really cared about not being able to write.
So when you hurt your arm and you say you asked yourself how much you cared about not being able to play, how much did you care?
I didn't care very much. I really didn't. I think it was really quite sobering in a way to realize that I thought I was going to miss being able to sit around with a guitar and entertain myself. But I immediately started to learn to write longhand with my left hand. And by the time my right hand started to work, I was almost completely left-handed. Take something away from somebody and it makes you revalue everything else that you've got. And I think that's what I did. So no, I'm not trying to be callous or hard or indifferent to my talent. But that was the space I was in. I was kind of in a space where I wasn't really worrying so much about what I'd lost, but I was very interested in what I'd gained. And I had a very clear list of things to do, 100 things to do, you know, while you can't play the guitar. And one of the things at the very, very bottom of the list, and I managed to actually get through this list in about a week. One of the things at the bottom of the list was go and see Mum, my mother, and ask her about the lost years.
The lost years?
The lost years.
The years when you were with your grandparents?
Yeah.
Well, it was your parents were on the road, I think. your father was a musician.
Yeah.
And well, you spent, when you were about 5 to 7, you were with your grandparents.
That's right. Not with my grandparents. I was with my grandmother, who was a single woman. She actually deserted my mother when she was married.
Why was it so important to you to feel? What did you need to know about that?
Well,
time?
I couldn't remember. I couldn't remember anything, and I couldn't remember very much about those years. All I could remember was really quite unpleasant things, and I wanted to know. So I went to see my mother, and I said, "Listen, don't give me any details. Don't give me any stuff. Don't give me any emotion. Just give me facts. I want to know where I was on, you know, June the 1st, where I was on June the 2nd, and because I said, you know, let me digest that, and then I'll come back later and ask you about the emotional stuff, the personal stuff, and the reasons. And whenever she did, I ran a tape machine, and whenever she digressed, I got her back on track and said, no, listen, just stick to the facts and help me, because, you know, and so a lot of the stuff was fairly fresh in her mind, but
did this, were there revelations for you in what she told you?
I mean, shocking revelations.
Like what? I don't know if you'd care to share them or not.
I can't really share them.
That's fine.
But what I realized was is that some of the memories that I did have of my childhood, that stopped, you know, where you know, you kind of go into a dark tunnel and you can't see what's at the other end of a memory. I'd actually remembered them in my work, that my writing was the memory that still functioned. You know, I've even been in therapy and, you know, confronted or come to that point where I've actually tried to, you know, remember that stuff. And my therapist once said to me, I'm not in therapy anymore, I did it for 3 years. Write it down, you know, write it down, write down what happened. And when you come to the point that you can't remember, just keep writing. And when I sat down to start writing, I started to get this incredible feeling of dread. And it was so enormous that I just broke down, and I realized that if I continued to try to remember, I would actually have a kind of nervous breakdown, and decided not to go on. You know, and I don't think, and what's interesting is just so that people don't think this is the Oprah Winfrey show. the reason why I can't talk about what happened is that I don't think it's particularly significant. Comparison to the terrible, terrible things that have happened to people that I know and that people that I read about. But its effect on me was enormous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't mean to suggest deep, dark secrets necessarily.
Right.
A curious byproduct of being the child of not only two very young people who were born in the war, met in the war and married in the Air Force. And you know, my father was very glamorous, wonderful looking, looked like a film star. My mother was a very sexy, well-dressed young girl. And you know, I came along very, very quickly. I think my mother, you know, conceived me like within about a week of their marriage. And there I was, you know, and I think, you know, he was out on the road, still young, having fun. And my mother had been a singer in a band, and I think she just wanted some time to herself. So she hung with me for about 2.5-3 years. And they were such fantastic years. You know, I was out on the road with my mum and dad, and I was with them all the time. And I used to sleep in between them. You know, I was in the way. I was there. I was the star of the show. I was on the stage. I can remember show business. And then it just goes black.
Well, how did show business look to you when you were young and your parents were on the road? Was that the kind of life you thought you might want for yourself sometime?
Oh, there was no question. That was what I was going to do.
That's what you wanted?
Yeah, no, it wasn't what I wanted. It's what I had. It was where I was. It's like, you know, this is Liza Minnelli and Lorna Luft, you know, except that for me, it was both mum and dad there all the time. And this extended family, it's a big dance orchestra, you know, with like 26 members.
But your father played clarinet?
Clarinet and saxophone, yeah.
And your mother sang?
Yeah, yeah.
No, before rock, and before you seriously took up guitar, you liked trad jazz, and I think you even played banjo before you got serious about the guitar. What did you prefer about jazz during the period that you were into that and didn't listen to that much rock?
Oh, this is a neat conjunction. It was the fact that it connected more with my father. And the kind of music that he played. The band used to play a Dixieland set in the show, which was very popular when I was a teenager. This is my father's band.
Mm-hmm.
It was a concession to the young people, you know, the crazy young people who like that jazz stuff, because most of it was ballroom dancing.
Uh-huh.
So this was a sort of 20-minute set, and my father played lead clarinet, and I used to love that because this seemed to me to be, you know, where, this was pre my discovery of rock and roll. And had I been exposed, you know, to, I don't know, John Lee Hooker or Hank Williams or any of those kind of early, or even Pete Seeger or any of those people that were kind of defining how the song was going to become a rock song, and, you know, how the song of those three different distinct forms of popular music would come together as the rock song 10 years later. If I'd have heard that music, I don't know whether I would have responded to it at all. I had no context for it. So I think, you know, the trad jazz thing was just what, you know, it was something that grew out of my need to mm-hmm. do something that connected with my dad, who I worshipped.
My guest is Pete Townsend. More after a break. This is Fresh Air.